Almost a year has passed since flooding from Hurricane Irene devastated communities throughout the Northeast. By most accounts, the community hardest hit by the catastrophe was Prattsville, a town of just 700 residents situated at the northwest corner of Greene County. Photographer Larry Gambin.
I couldn't believe what happened down here. I couldn't believe it. From one end, where houses were washed off their foundation, to the west end, where just multiple houses were just, at one point in one of the houses, the bottom floor was washed out of the house. The house was still there, resting on the foundation, but the first floor was, the actual floor that you walk on was sitting outside the house. And this is a huge, huge floor, and it was amazing.
From now through October, the Zadok Pratt Museum offers an exhibition of Gambin's photographs entitled After Irene. With his wife Amelia, Gambin spent the 6 weeks following the storm documenting the widespread devastation.
My wife and I were in Joplin, Missouri about 4 or 5 days after that tornado last year, and I've never seen anything like that. And I think 168 people were killed there, and how hundreds more weren't, I'll never know. But this is probably the second worst thing I've ever seen. I came here after the flood with gloves and a pry bar and some tools. And Carolyn, the director of the museum, asked me where my camera was. And I go, it's home. Oh, you got to go get it. You know, someone has to record this for history. So I went home, got my cameras, came back. And I thought this was going to be, you know, a 1 or 2 day project. I was here 6 weeks. It took a long time going through because I documented everything. I took 2,500 photographs those first few weeks. And everybody wanted to talk. Well, actually, the first thing is people hated photographers. They were really, really down on people coming in there and rubbernecking and taking photographs. So I'd tell them I was shooting for the Pratt Museum. And then they'd start talking. And I did this with my wife, Amelia. And we walked from one end of town to the other, both sides of the street, a lot of the backyards. But we talked with so many different residents. And everybody, especially right after the storm, I think it was almost in shock. They had to get their story out. Because some of them were on their roofs. We have friends who the back of their house was ripped off. And they said their goodbyes. They thought they were gone. And it was a very, very emotional experience, but it took 6 weeks to completely document everything. And like I said, I thought it was going to be a 2 or 3 day deal, but it wasn't.
Andy Reed, a 5-year resident of the area who leads tours at the Pratt Museum, recalls learning of the impending storm.
Yeah, so I was watching the Weather Channel, and I was various experts. Predictions were that the storm was going to be hitting over the area, and you know, and when I spoke to people and relayed my concerns, a lot of people were playing it down. You know, don't worry about it; it'll just be a storm; it'll pass over. And when it did hit, irrespective of what I felt and knew was going to happen, it was still a huge shock. What happened? But because I lived in an area where I'm not next to any towns, it wasn't apparent to me until I actually ventured out of my house of the devastation. And when I went into Wyndham and subsequently Prattsville, the devastation was, it was hard to comprehend the devastation. And I'm sure the feeling of people who had really damaged houses, the feeling of overwhelming, how are we going to deal with this, must have been so acute. I really don't know how people felt that lost their houses, and unfortunately, the couple of people who lost their lives, and people who were, the upheaval was so, it was so devastating that I'm really surprised, you know, pleasantly surprised at how much people have managed to bounce back.
Janelle Moore, a lifelong resident of Prattsville, who with her husband owns and operates the Prattsville Diner, witnessed the flooding from her home.
I came down from the house and I went into the diner. I was in there having some breakfast, and then I saw the water rising and rising outside our diner. The stream bed next to our diner with the little bridge, it wasn't even 4 foot deep underneath there. And it was rising up and it was hitting the bottom of the bridge. So I went up to the house to tell my husband that we needed to close. He came back down 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock in the morning we closed. But at the time of us closing, during that time, he turned the fuel tank off, turned up the freezers. We got out. We just made it with his truck over the little bridge from my hair salon that goes, a little bridge goes across and goes up to our home. We just made it across when his back truck tires hit the bridge and the bridge was gone. So we just made it across to our house. Fortunately, we got up there, and of course the rain happened from like 8 o'clock in the morning until about 5 or 5:30 that night, and it was continuous. So we watched from the upstairs bedroom, watching the water, seeing a car floating down Main Street, and it was just like devastating. Of course, everybody says, oh, you saw everything. I said, yes and no. You had all the foliage on the trees, so there was only minimal of what you could see. Of course, we felt very fortunate because we were in our house, but then we also saw the fuel tank coming up to the back of my hair salon and slamming into the trail, the hair salon. So I knew that was ruined. That was about 6 foot of water in there. When we finally did go to see what damage happened to the diner was, there was an 8 foot sinkhole in the front of the diner. The concrete steps with the railings was flipped upside down in the 8 foot sinkhole in the front of the diner. The backside, the whole foundation was undermined on the backside. The only thing that saved the back addition that Chris Helmers, that's the man that built the building years ago, the backside held up because he had built it on a 1,000-gallon septic tank, and that's what kept that the backside of it up. The fuel tank had gone, was gone. Our diner sign was taken away. Eventually somebody did bring back one panel of it, so we ended up, and the pole was still there, but that was all gone.
You just knew that was a disaster. You just knew it. And then the first time we drove, I drove into Wyndham first because I couldn't get into Prattsville. So I drove into Wyndham. I took a couple hundred photographs in there. And then we found a way to get into Prattsville. We came down this way and we were stunned. I mean, you couldn't tell what happened down there. You couldn't tell if it was a flood, a tornado. You couldn't tell what it was.
I'm not next to any towns. It wasn't apparent to me until I actually ventured out of my house of the devastation. And when I went into Wyndham and subsequently Prattsville, the devastation was... It was hard to comprehend the devastation. And I'm sure the feeling of people who had really damaged houses, the feeling of overwhelming, how are we going to deal with this, must have been so acute.
And my wife and I were just stunned by what we saw, because in the beginning, the first few days, everything smelled like either gasoline, kerosene, all mixed together, gasoline, kerosene, propane, and death, because there was a lot, either rotting food. And for some reason, there were tons of dead birds everywhere. And they're just these smells combined. And you're walking around thinking, my God, this is toxic. And I had brought my tripods and my monopod, and I didn't use any of them because I was so afraid what I was standing on. And my boots, I pressure washed because I wouldn't even let them in the house after walking through this place for all these weeks.
The Pratt Museum, heavily damaged in the storm, has been home to furniture, documents, and ephemera belonging to the eponymous founder of Prattsville, Zadok Pratt.
It's conserved. They had all of... they had a lot of textiles, a lot of historic papers, and all of that's in a freezer in Pennsylvania because it costs tremendous amounts of money to have that brought back. But they're going to have that done. The furniture, which was a lot of it, was Pratt. We're just devastated in the water. I mean, Pratt's desk was laying on the ground in that mud. if you saw the photo downstairs of the dining room table, they were all set there. That thing is actually about 8 feet from where it was. And if you see the water line's at about 5.5 feet. That table was raised, floated, and set back down when the water still and didn't even break a glass.
Janelle Moorer.
That day also, when we saw the diner, I came running because I was tour guiding here at the museum. And I came here to see how the damage was here in our carriage house. It was just destroyed and everything, all our collections in there that were downstairs. It was just like devastating. And then walking into the museum and seeing such a mess in here. The one thing that was really strange and weird is the table that I had all set with Zadok Pratt's Flow Blue dishes were... They were all on the table still, and I couldn't believe it didn't tip over, and it was still, it had floated. They said the table floated and went over to the other side of the room, but it was amazing that they weren't off and onto the floor. The whole casing that the other dishes were in had tipped over, but some were broken in there, but not as much as could have been. It was just amazing how everything was. I kept focusing on everything here because I was tour guiding here, and I just said, and everybody says, but you got your business. I said, well, my husband's there, and I know my hair business is, I just didn't want to face going in there and looking at it. I eventually did, but my husband said it was pretty bad, and it was 6 foot of water in there, so that was all ruined. So, but you have to pick yourself up and just keep going and try to help everybody out. So I stayed here at the museum as much as I could, and then I had to go to the diner to help out, but... I got volunteers here. I mean, the volunteers just kept coming. It's just like amazing. And to this day, it's just amazing how we still have volunteers coming. Church volunteers, the Huntersfield Church up on the hill. I don't know what we do. They were like our angels, bringing people, more and more people, and they're still coming. And we're so thankful.
Rather than staging the show as planned in the museum's carriage house, the directors decided to open the partially restored interior of the building for Gambin's exhibit.
The board decided that... The building looks so nice on the outside. It's such a beautiful, quaint building. And as you drive by, you have no idea what it's like on the inside. And actually, the carriage house has been, I think, mostly repaired. But they wanted it inside the museum so you can see what the walls look like, you can see the damage, and what needs to be done. Because these folks are scrambling for money. You know what the economy's like. You know what all arts organizations are really suffering. No one wants to spend money on anything, but I'll keep my mouth shut about that. And so they decided that people really need to see this. I knew what it looked like in here, so I thought it was a great idea. They're hanging a little high because there's no wall. But, you know, you make adjustments for it. I had no problem. I actually thought it was a great idea. And I think it helps because they have a little jar out front and they're looking for donations. And... it's striking, so it helps. I think it helps.
I think when people come up to the building, the museum, they see a building that looks very in good condition. However, when you come inside, you see the devastation that took place. And I think that's indicative of the town, you know, not just Prattsville, Wyndham as well, and other towns, that although, you know, the facade has been cleaned up, there are still a lot of destruction and upheaval that are, you know, in people's lives behind the front door. And it's just, as I say, it's the same for the museum.
Gambin's photographs, largely black and white, depict broken houses, the people of Prattsville, and the earliest efforts of recovery. They are displayed in frames milled from storm debris by Wyndham artist Ray Shearer.
The whole concept was that the military was everywhere, and I had no way to illustrate that without doing a collage. I mean, they were up and down the street. They were up Washington Street. They were on the bridge, on the other side of the bridge. I mean, they were absolutely everywhere. And if they weren't so helpful, it would have been scary. But I really thought it's more or less like a salute to them, because it was really difficult. It was really hot. You can see how they were all full uniform, long sleeve. I couldn't believe it. They had vests on. And the military police had bulletproof vests on. I mean, it had to be hot. It had to be 98 degrees some of those days after it. And I just thought it was real fitting to put that in there. Shoes.
This is a roof. This is a roof. And they, I think the basement was underneath this, their access to the basement, or might have been just from the porch. I have no idea where they came from. I was walking through the backyards when this happened. And this is a roof from their porch or maybe from next door. I have no idea where it came from. And they were drying out their shoes there. And I was so struck by that when I saw it. I go, something as basic as shoes, they're gone. And let's face it, you look at them, they're trash. They're just covered in mud. And this was down in Alan Huggins' house. And I think I told you that people didn't like photographers. I had to explain to them. So I told Alan's wife that, you know, I was shooting for the museum. And she invited me into the house, which a lot of people ended up doing. And this is about an angel in the front window of the house, or the picture window of the house. This is about 8 or 9 feet off the ground, and the water rose. And if you look on a digital photograph, you can see a little bit of brown in there where the water touched. And as soon as it touched the angel, it stopped, and then it receded. And I was talking with Michael Ryan. He does a lot of photography for the Wyndham Journal. And I said, you know, this photograph should not have come out. I'm shooting from a very, very dark house out into a bright lit sunshine. And when I took the photograph, I said, no way it's going to come out. But it did come out, and it came out very well. And this is the only photo that I have titled, and it's just Pratzel Angel. I was going to do titles and explanations of each one of these things. And I just couldn't. I couldn't title them. And what do you say? You know, they speak for themselves. I couldn't say anything about them. It is what it is. It was too emotional to even just sit there and contemplate.
When asked about the process of recovery, Gambin describes a town still struggling to put itself back together.
And I start off, you know, you can drive through Wyndham, and you can hardly tell there was a flood, but if you drive through Prattsville, you can hardly tell there's a recovery. And there's a multitude of reasons for it, and there's all sorts of blame going around for it. But I don't know who to pin it on. I mean, some people blame the town. Other people say the town has nothing to do with it at all. And, you know, I know the people in the town. I can't imagine anybody in the town trying to impede recovery. And I just think there's bitterness. There's a lot of bitterness. I also said in the article, FEMA is a four-letter word in this town. Mm-hmm. And people don't like insurance companies anymore. It's just every town around here, you go to Wyndham, you go to Lexington, you can go down to Margaretville. Everything looks not whole, but almost whole. And you walk through here, you drive through here at night, it's empty. It's a ghost town. And I don't know why, and I don't think it's right. And I think mostly that this town has been forgotten. It's a town of working people. It's not a vacation town. And, you know, money goes to money. There's a few little oases around where, you know, there's plants and flags and flowers and looks really nice. And on either side for 3 or 4 houses, there's nothing, or boarded up houses or a lot. They took down 2 houses up here to the west. Reichard's house, that big yellow one that was all over the news, and the one next to it, the one that had just sunk right in, right next to him. Those two are down. They replaced down the east end the one house, the blue house that was off the foundation. My friend Joe's house across the street, that washed down to the east, less than 100 yards, but it's still there. They haven't done anything about that. And he's moved out of the area. He's over in Wyndham now, I think. Or on near Cunningham Road. And, you know, it scatters you. It scatters you. And especially because there is no recovery here to speak of, or it's taking so long, you have to make other arrangements. Mm-hmm. And it really saddens me, because it shouldn't be this way. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an explanation. I've asked a lot of people. I was trying to write this article, and I couldn't find an answer.
Do you feel that people have found... Feel free to say you don't know the answer, but I mean, found that, you know, the sort of infrastructure of applying for FEMA money and everything else is like too daunting or too slow?
Yes, it's too slow, and I think it's too fixed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the government has some like strange ideas. I have one gentleman I know is working on his actually he owns just a couple of apartments, and they're making him change all the wiring in the downstairs. And he goes, "Why?" He goes, "Well, the wiring was compromised." He goes, "No, it's not. It's wire. It dries." "Oh no, but we have the experience of Katrina, where the salt water infiltrated the wiring." He goes, "This wasn't Katrina, number one. Number two, there's no salt water here. All I have to do is dry it out." But no, he had to replace it all. He had to replace the boxes, which dry out. They're just metal. They get wet. They're not going to short out ever again. There's no corrosion from the salt. He had to replace the radiators and for his heating system, and that's a closed system. They made him do that. He had to replace all the floors down to the joists rather than just dry it out, treat it. They made him replace it. He's spending tons of money, and because his is commercial property, he doesn't get any FEMA money, but they sure can tell him what to do. And I think a lot of that is going on with government saying, well, we have Katrina experience, but this is not Katrina. They need to get some Prattsville experience underneath their belts and treat it like Prattsville. Some people are real troopers and are going forward, and you know, they get knocked back two steps and they just pick themselves up and go, "I'm going five steps forward." And other people are just knocked for a loop and that's it. And down for the count, they're not coming back. And other people, you know, it's they can't get a break, they can't get money, it's really, you know, it's tough to make a living up here. You got to make a living, put together your house. You don't have any money to start with. Don't have a car. People lost two cars, and then they have no car. They can't go to Lowe's to pick up stuff to fix the house. They can't go to work. And what do you do? I mean, the people aren't rich here. It's been a very, very bad situation for a lot of people. Everybody, you know, has a job, goes out and does their job, and then they come home here to Prattsville. And you know, these are fiercely proud people. I mean, I love this town. I've lived here almost 30 years, and these are some of the greatest people in the world. And they're going to come back. It's just, they're coming back against some incredible odds with no help. I feel these people have been left to their own, and they're doing everything on their own. And God bless them. You know. In another couple of years, this town will be twice as nice as it ever was, and it's only going to be because of the people who live here and what they did. It's not that they're getting all these grants and generous donations and help from the outside. I mean, these people are slugging it out by themselves.
Janelle Moore.
We had volunteers. The amount of volunteers were absolutely astronomical. It was just fantastic, all the volunteers. If it wasn't for the volunteers, we don't know what it would have happened or what we would have done. Very, very fortunate ourselves. So devastated for all the people here in town. And we were just rushing very quickly. My husband was handing out coffee. We were handing out bottles of water to people. We were doing whatever we could. We also took whatever food out of our walk-in to take and feed the people. I mean, everybody here that had food was doing that. You know, the Great American, Jim at the Great American was doing that. Beth's Cafe was doing that. We were all together, working together. Everybody was helping everybody to stay focused and having to deal with it all on our own before any major big help came to our rescue. But my husband and I did buy our diner on the side of the bridge on our side. It was all trees and debris and everything. It was all attached into the bridge. And with our bare hands, it took us 1 hour. I don't think it was 2 hours. I think it was an hour to pull it all out with our hands, our bare hands, to clean it. And it was how many weeks and days before the state came to clean the opposite side. It was just unreal on how quickly we did for ourselves to clean up. And I said to my husband, "I'm not going on the other side. That isn't our side. This is our side, and we're just doing that." But everybody was working together to help everybody else out. It was just phenomenal. And the direction from our town supervisor, Corey O'Hara, was spectacular, along with everybody else. because there were a whole lot of people up on their roofs of their houses, as well as their businesses, trying to, you know, stay alive for this to pass over. And it was just, you know, my heart goes out to every single one of all those people, because losing their houses and everything in their homes. And we were so fortunate up on the hill that our house was all right. The water did go to get up to the halfway up the embankment to our house. We ended up finding out behind the diner, there's a row of trees. And the row of trees, there were logs came down from the stream, and the trees acted as a dam. They stacked one on top of the other, and they were behind there. And so the water got veered on that side, because I'm looking from my bedroom window, and I'm looking out, and I'm seeing all this water next to this trailer that's in the field there that people live in. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the water's all there. I said to my husband, he's like, oh no, he said. And we didn't know until we came down and saw all the trees had backed up, and that's why all the water came and damaged so badly on the opposite side of town.
Andy Reed.
People realize is that Mother Nature has a force that sometimes we can't really compete against. Some people, getting back to what I was talking about in terms of Prattsville, the people who live in Prattsville, I think a lot of people, it's almost like they've been betrayed by someone who they personally know, and I'm talking about the Schoharie River. You know that some people are angry with Mother Nature, with the river, and they have, you know, legitimate reasons to be angry and still feel not completely secure with themselves that this couldn't happen again.
With the first anniversary of the flood approaching, volunteer energy and donations are still sought.
In order to fix these things up, they're not going to, you know, people are relying on people to realise that, you know, we still need people's help to, you know, in form of kind donations. And people have been donating kindly, and it's been very well received. And, you know, I would like to, you know, say a really big thank you to people who have donated. But we really need people to help continually if they can, either physically or financially. If they can help us, that would be fantastic. In order to restore the magnificence of this beautiful museum, and that will give back to the town an icon of what yesteryear looked like. At the moment, the photographs give us unfortunately are part of the museum of the history of what actually happened in Prattsville, but hopefully in the coming months and years we'll get this place restored to its former beauty, and hopefully, you know, the community and people visiting the museum can help with that. And come into the museum and speak to people, and, you know, contribute your ideas, your thoughts, your you know, whatever you can give of yourself, and help restore, as I said earlier, an icon to the town, and to help the town restore itself.
For more information about Gambin's photographs, the museum, and the effort to rebuild, you can visit prattmuseum.com or prattsville.org. You can call the Pratt Museum at 518-299-3395.